Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. This Friday, May 20th, is Endangered Species Day. It is hoped that this day will spur people to learn about and take action to protect threatened and endangered species. I want to observe this day by reading from a booklet called Silent Wings, a Memorial to the Passenger Pigeon, printed originally in 1946 by the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology. In the dedication, Walter Scott writes, in part, "This booklet is dedicated to the memory of the last passenger pigeon killed in Wisconsin and is published upon the occasion of the unveiling of a monument at Wyalusing State Park to this bird. But this dedication is not only to a single bird, but to the bird as a species. It is not only to the memory of the dead, but also to the living." And in the introduction, Dr. Stanley Temple, who is retired from 32 years as professor of wildlife ecology at UW-Madison, writes, "On September 1, 1914, the last surviving passenger pigeon died in her cage at the Cincinnati Zoo. In the span of less than a century, her species had dwindled from billions to one and then to none, in perhaps the most tragic episode in the troubled history of our interactions with North American wildlife. In 2014, the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology commemorates two milestones, the centennial of the passenger pigeon's extinction in 1914 and the 75th anniversary of the Society's founding in 1939. The pigeon and the Society are closely linked in many significant ways. The Society's journal is named the Passenger Pigeon to honor the memory of a bird that was once such a conspicuous member of Wisconsin's avifauna. The Society recognizes significant accomplishments by individuals with four categories of passenger pigeon awards, and the Society erected the Passenger Pigeon Monument at Wyalusing State Park in 1947 as a very public reminder of the tragic loss. This booklet was first published in 1947 on the occasion of the dedication of the monument, and we now reprint it in 2014 to honor the two anniversaries the Society observes this year. Silent Wings has become something of a classic in the literature on passenger pigeons, primarily because of the writings of two Wisconsinites, Aldo Leopold and Arlie William Bill Schroeger. At the Society's convention in 1946, on the occasion of the unveiling of the bronze plaque that would become the centerpiece of the Passenger Pigeon Monument, Aldo Leopold delivered a dedication speech on a monument to the pigeon. Leopold's first rewrite of that speech appeared in Silent Wings a year later, and in 1949, a second rewrite received widespread exposure as one of the most poignant essays in Leopold's classic, A Sand County Almanac. Bill Schroeger was fascinated with the story of the passenger pigeon and wrote several of the most authoritative descriptions of the species' life history and ecology in Wisconsin and throughout its range. Two of his essays are published in Silent Wings, and his monumental book, The Passenger Pigeon, Its Natural History and Extinction, was published in 1955. It stands as the definitive work on the pigeon. By reprinting Silent Wings, the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology hopes to keep the memory of the passenger pigeon's tragic extinction alive in the current generation, both as a reminder of the mistakes of our past and as a warning about the current extinction crisis that threatens the continued existence of tens of thousands of species worldwide. May Silent Wings and the story of the passenger pigeon inspire us to do what it takes to avoid having to commemorate many more extinctions 100 years from now. And that's Stanley Temple's introduction to this book. I'll read now Aldo Leopold, beautiful essay on a monument to the pigeon. "We meet here to commemorate the death of a species. This monument symbolizes our sorrow. We grieve because no living man will see again the onrushing phalanx of victorious birds sweeping a path for spring across the March skies, chasing the defeated winter from all the woods and prairies of Wisconsin. Men still live who, in their youth, remember pigeons. Trees still live that, in their youth, were shaken by a living wind. But a few decades hence, only the oldest oaks will remember, and at long last, only the hills will know. There will always be pigeons in books and in museums, but these are effigies and images, dead to all hardships and to all delights. Book pigeons cannot dive out of a cloud to make the deer run for cover, nor clap their wings in thunderous applause of the mast-laden woods. They know no urge of seasons. They feel no kiss of sun, no lash of wind and weather. They live forever by not living at all. Our grandfathers, who saw the glory of the fluttering hosts, were less well-housed, well-fed, well-clothed than we are. The strivings by which they bettered our lot were also those which deprived us of pigeons. Perhaps we now grieve because we are not sure in our hearts that we have gained by the exchange. It is a century now since Darwin gave us the first glimpse of the origin of species. We know now what was unknown to all the preceding caravan of generations, that man is only a fellow voyager with other creatures in the odyssey of evolution, and that his captaincy of the adventuring ship conveys the power, but not necessarily the right, to discard at will among the crew. We should, in the century since Darwin, have achieved a sense of community with living things and of wonder over the magnitude and duration of the biotic enterprise. For one species to mourn the death of another is a new thing under the sun. The Cro-Magnon who slew the last mammoth thought only of steaks. The sportsman who shot the last pigeon thought only of his prowess. The sailor who clubbed the last auk thought nothing at all. But we who have lost our pigeons mourn the loss. Had the funeral been ours, the pigeons would hardly have mourned us. In this fact, rather than in Mr. Vandeveer Bush's bombs or Mr. DuPont's nylons, lies the objective evidence of our superiority over the beasts. We who erect this monument are performing a dangerous act. Because our sorrow is genuine, we are tempted to believe that we had no part in the demise of the pigeon. The truth is that our grandfathers, who did the actual killing, were our agents. They were our agents in the sense that they shared the conviction, which we have only now begun to doubt, that it is more important to multiply people and comforts than to cherish the beauty of the land in which they live. What we are doing here today is publicly to confess a doubt whether this is true. This, then, is a monument to a bird we have lost and to a doubt we have gained. Perched like a duck hawk on this cliff, it will scan this wide valley, watching through the days and years. For many a march, it will watch the geese go by, telling the river about clearer, colder, lonelier waters on the tundra. For many an April, it will see the redbuds come and go, and for many a May, the flush of oak blooms on a thousand hills. Questing wood ducks will search these basswoods for hollow limbs. Golden prothonotaries will shake the golden pollen from the river willows. Egrets will pose on these sloughs in August. Plovers will whistle from September skies. Hickory nuts will plop into October leaves, and hail will rattle in November woods. But no pigeons will pass, for there are no pigeons, save only this flightless one graven in bronze on this rock. Tourists will read this inscription, but their thoughts, like the bronze pigeon, will have no wings. We are told by economic moralists that to mourn the pigeon is mere nostalgia, that if the pigeoners had not done away with him, the farmers would ultimately have been obliged, in self-defense, to do so. Perhaps this is true, but perhaps it is also true that we did away with an idea as well as a bird. It is one of the ironies of science that it discovers, ex post facto, a philosophical significance in what it has previously tossed into the dustbin. The pigeon was no mere bird. He was a biological storm. He was the lightning that played between two biotic poles of intolerable intensity, the fat of the land and his own zest for living. Yearly, the feathered tempest roared up and down and across the continent, sucking up the laden fruits of forest and prairie, burning them in a traveling blast of life. Like any other chain reaction, the pigeon could survive no diminution of his own furious intensity. Once the pigeoners had subtracted from his numbers, and once the settlers had chopped gaps in the continuity of his fuel, his flame guttered out with hardly a sputter or even a wisp of smoke. Today the laden oaks will flaunt their burden at the sky, but the feathered lightning is no more. Worm and weevil must now perform slowly and silently the biological task which once drew thunder from the firmament. The wonder is not that the pigeon passed out, but that he ever survived through all the millennia of pre-Babician time. The pigeon lived by his desire for clustered grape and bursting beechnut, and by his contempt of miles and seasons. Things that Wisconsin did not offer him today, he sought and found tomorrow in Michigan, or Labrador, or Tennessee. To find them required only the free sky and the will to ply his wings. But there are fruits in this land unknown to pigeons, and as yet to most men. Perhaps we too can live by our desires to find them, and by a contempt for miles and seasons, a love of free sky, and a will to ply our wings. And that's Aldo Leopold's writing, On a Monument to a Pigeon. If you go to Wyalusing State Park, you will love it there. It's the confluence of the Wisconsin and the Mississippi River. And be sure to go to see the Passenger Pigeon Monument there. It's in a beautiful spot. And think about the passenger pigeons diving out of a cloud to make the deer run for cover and clap their wings in thunderous applause of the mast-laden woods. Dr. Stanley Temple, who wrote the introduction to Silent Wings, is someone I've admired for many years. He's been on the forefront of the most important scientific wildlife work during my adult lifetime, to say the least. He's another of Wisconsin's finest naturalists. I was delighted to find him generous and supportive with his suggestions for further reading and research for my radio gig. I'll read from the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame website, where he was inducted in 2020. And note the similar very early life involvement with a museum, as Fran Hammerstrom described in her writing about her early life. Dr. Stanley Temple turned a childhood love of birds into a lifetime of research, education, and conservation advocacy. His childhood mentors included Rachel Carson. As a teenager, he worked at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. He developed a passion for raptors and began practicing falconry in junior high school. He attended Cornell University and earned his Ph.D. in 1972 while studying at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. World Wildlife Fund then hired him to launch programs for critically endangered birds on several islands in the Indian Ocean. He made the move to Wisconsin in 1976, hired as a faculty member in the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Wildlife Ecology. Aldo Leopold created and taught the nation's first university wildlife management program at UW-Madison. His successor, one of Leopold's students, was Dr. Joseph Hickey. Third in line for this historic position was Stan Temple, who continued this amazing tradition for 32 more years. Dr. Temple and his students studied some of the rarest and most endangered species. He has also worked in the responses of wildlife to habitat fragmentation, human impacts on wildlife populations, and the ecology of avian predators. His pioneering work showing the devastating impact of cats on bird populations has earned him both acclaim and antipathy. Over 10,000 students have taken one or more of Stan's courses at UW-Madison. In addition, he advised 75 graduate students. He was a founder of the field of conservation biology and helped create an educational program focused on preserving biological diversity while meeting human needs. Now that he's retired, Stan helps spread Aldo Leopold's land ethic as senior fellow for the Aldo Leopold Foundation, researching, writing, and speaking about Leopold, comparing Leopold's original botanical records to more recent surveys. Temple co-published new research about climate change impacts on plant phenology. He brought the history of the passenger pigeon alive to thousands of Wisconsinites with presentations and articles during the 100th anniversary of the pigeon's extinction in 2014. He's currently retracing the steps of Leopold's seminal late 1920s game survey of the Upper Midwest. He continues to teach and mentor students both through the Leopold Foundation and as an emeritus professor at the University of Wisconsin. Buddy Huffaker, the executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, writes, "Dr. Temple's scholarship and voluminous scientific contributions have helped reshape the entire field of wildlife ecology and management. In fact, it is difficult to identify one single contribution as being the most significant, given the breadth and depth of his work." And that ends my partial reading of Silent Wings for today. As you might imagine, I plan to follow up with more about Dr. Temple and the work he did with his students. I hope you have plenty of time to be outside. Migrant birds are arriving every day. It's a great time to be outside. And I also plan to follow up with more readings of Bill Schorger's work. His stories about the passenger pigeons are fascinating. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.